Around Comics, episode 75.
This is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of the show, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
And next is our other co-host, Mr. Tom Caters.
My mind is trapped in a multiverse of ideas.
52.
Heavy, dude.
Hey, it's and it's Monday, which means we have our Around Comics Monday regular. You know him as the host of Word Balloon. He is our good buddy, Mr. John Suntress.
Hello! It's my Joan Rivers for you.
Hello.
I'm all red carpeted out from the Grammys last week.
I've seen Joan Rivers do a stand-up thing recently, and she was actually surprisingly funny.
She's a pro's pro. Come on,
she
man.
Was, you know,
yeah.
At one time.
You kind of forget that.
For a long time.
But you
do,
that.
Because
yeah.
She's done this red carpet crap with her daughter.
Well, and not recognize people like, what's-his-face from Sarah, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
She didn't recognize Will Ferrell?
Two years ago, quick story, yes. She's interviewing Mike Nichols, great director and great comedic genius, as Caters knows. And Will Ferrell
Second
doesn't realize that she's being Joan Rivers is interviewing Mike Nichols and sees Mike Nichols and says, "Hey, I just wanted to tell you I'm a huge fan of yours." And Mike Nichols is like, "Oh, hey, thanks a lot," and starts shaking his hand. And she's like, "Excuse me, I'm doing an interview. I don't know who the hell you are." And she was serious.
Yeah.
And Ferrell's eyes light up.
Yeah.
Nichols' eyes light up. And he's like, "You're absolutely right, Ms. Rivers. I'm terribly sorry. Mr. Nichols.
It was really funny.
Your car is ready."
He completely understood exactly what happened almost immediately.
Awesome. Exactly. So the two guys know exactly what's going on. They're laughing their asses off. Anyway,
that's
Mike.
Hilarious.
Very funny.
Oh, my God. I just can't stand to look at her because she's had so much work done. It's just, she's just like,
they shouldn't have had, Heath Ledger. It should have been Joan Rivers for the next Batman movie.
All right,
folks.
She's crying right now listening to the podcast.
Joan Rivers.
Damn you, Cadence.
All right, folks. I want to let everyone know that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by Borders.
Borders is your source for the best original graphic novels, manga, deluxe hardcovers, and trade paperback collections. Not only will you find exactly what you are looking for, you'll discover unexpected new authors and series. While you're at Borders, don't forget to check out their huge selection of music, movies, and magazines. Borders isn't just a bookstore, it has everything you need for your comics culture lifestyle. Google Borders for a valuable coupon, and always remember to check Borders first. To find a store near you, go to www.borderstores.com.
Got it. Thank you to the fine folks at Borders. All right, guys, it's Monday, but at the end of the week, we're going to be heading off to Gotham. That's right, it's the New York Comic-Con coming up here the 23rd through the 25th at the Jacob K. Javits Center in New York. While we're there, we're going to be working with the Hero Initiative to raise some money, and if you don't know who the Hero Initiative is, you certainly should. They help create a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, please visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. We'll be taking donations all weekend long at our table. We have a few people that have agreed to help us out. Sal, who is going to be there with us?
Well, first of all, you'll get the chance to meet Steve Bryant, the artist and co-creator of Athena Voltaire, the author of The Other Side and Scalp, Jason Aaron, the artist of The Other Side, Cameron Stewart, the artist of The All-New Atom, and our good friend Mike Norton, Sean McKeever, co-creator of Gravity and now exclusive writer for DC Comics, legendary creator Gene Colan, and by special arrangement from Vanguard Productions, Carmine Infantino. And just announced
I just
this
got off the phone with someone.
You did? Who?
Yeah. Greg Rucka.
Well, Greg has been kind enough to join us at the New York Comic Con on Friday night. We're going to kick off the show from 4 to 4:45. He's going to be at our table in the podcast arena and signing autographs and asking, along with us, for donations to the Hero Initiative. Mm-hmm. And also at the Hero Initiative, we're going to have all sorts of art and signed memorabilia to sell, and all the proceeds from that will be going straight to the Hero Initiative, and who knows what else is going to happen. I don't know.
We've got stuff from Steve Rude.
Could be anything.
Chris Somney, yeah. Ryan Stegman.
You could get stabbed by Stan Lee.
That could happen.
Is that like the crazy?
For the right donation, we can make that happen.
But we've had a bunch of great stuff donated to us from people like Steve Rude, mm-hmm. Chris Somney, Ryan Stegman, Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Scotty Young, Steve Bryant, Greg Titus, Pat Loika, Scott Johnson, Mark from Dark Tower Comics has given us a bunch of stuff. We have a ton of stuff, really cool art and signed stuff and books and all sorts of great stuff. So come check us out and buy something and you can
and
donate
have fun.
To Hero. And have, yeah, well,
it's
going to
be a great
con. Yeah,
so. Really looking forward to it. Speaking of Mark and Dark Tower, want to let everyone know that Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago.
Except here, this Friday, we should point out.
Yes, we will not be this Friday.
We will
not
be
here.
Drunk
in New
York.
York
Square somewhere.
Yeah. I'll be
on a subway platform with asses up.
That's
down,
the plan.
Just like Kyle MacLachlan.
Hose down, pimp. What? Oh, I don't know.
But you can still down. Come to Dark Tower and talk
to
Mark.
Well, certainly you can come to Dark
Mark's
Tower.
Mark's going to be in New York.
Mark's going to be in New York.
Oh, no, Mark
will
be
who's going to be here?
I'm watching
who's
the store.
Oh, yeah. So you can come
John
in.
John Sundress is.
John can't come to
I'm like the Maytag repairman. I'm always here.
You're going to have a microphone plugged into nothing.
Exactly. I'll be talking to myself.
So,
Comics, what do you think?
We're not recording, but we just tell John that
Mommy the Strange Man talks to me.
Jack Gardner, stop arguing. Let's get back to the next topic.
Jack and Gardner. Which is Jack?
But normally, like Around Comics is recorded every Friday night at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. When you're here, remember to ask about Dark Tower's pull list membership. It's one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, indie comics, trades, as well as statues, action figures, and more. Come to Dark Tower for all your comics and collectible needs.
They'll drop a bomb on you.
Baby. The Gap Band. So I'm suggesting either Jack Knight or Jack Jordan.
Idiots talking about.
We're on our own vibe right now.
He'll drop a bomb on you. I know what song he was
good
doing.
God.
I'm a child of the 80s.
Wow. I hate you two guys together like this because it's always stuff I don't know what you're talking
and
about.
No
I feel so insecure.
Was our subject last
week. Yeah, LARPing. Great.
Much to the delight of Steve Bryant.
Steve Bryant sent me an email about the LARPing.
Yes, I did.
That was very nice.
We all know James Lofton is the biggest LARPer.
James Lofton?
Yeah.
I can see
everyone knows it's a character trait of an elf.
Does everyone know what LARPing is out there?
Live action role playing.
It's my favorite anagram of geekdom.
I have to say, I did not know what that was until last week. I had no idea what LARPing was.
So you were running home to get to Wikipedia just like me?
No, well, they talked about it enough that I understood it, but I didn't know beforehand.
We're like Jeff Johns. We give you just enough to work on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
The explanation
not dumbing,
the explanation. Yeah, exactly.
Not dumbing down your comments for an idiot like me.
All right, folks. This is one of our news and reviews episodes, so that means it is time for Wire to Wire Comic News.
Wire to Wire Comic Book News.
All right, guys. Right from the top here. Rich Kozlowski's Three Geeks is going to be hitting the big screen. So all the Kozlowski fans out there, I was a big fan of his graphic novel The King. So oh, yeah.
Three Fingers, mm-hmm. which is really good stuff. And I haven't read the Three Geeks yet, but I was reading a little bit about it, and it looks like an interesting premise for an independent film.
It feels like we should all be behind it.
I think so. Rich is a really nice guy, and he gives free sausage away with his comic books.
Really?
Yeah, like a little packet. And
what
it has
type of sausage? Like a breakfast
like summer
sausage?
No, it's like
a guy perking up.
Summer,
right?
Is it sausage? Is it summer sausage?
It's like a summer sausage that his dad makes.
You know,
he's from Wisconsin.
He's a Wisconsin
guy.
That
is fucking awesome because, my summers were all about sausage.
Seasonal
meat.
He's a Wisconsin guy, and his dad makes sausage. And he has, like, on his little mini comics, he puts a little plastic envelope and it's got a little little slice of summer sausage.
Summer sausage is delicious.
You know, unlike the superhero movies, I have to say, I think the movies that are based on indie comics are close to batting 1,000. Ghost World was excellent.
Yeah, they're good.
Art School Confidential, I enjoy.
Oh, well, that's not based on a comic, though, is it?
Well, but it's enough of...
Yeah,
you know,
comic-related.
It is close.
Dan
Files. But,
Road to Perdition.
Perdition was great.
Fantastic.
Howard the Duck.
Spider-Man.
History of Violence.
Spider-Man.
Howard the Duck.
More mainstream.
Sin City. And now 300, which I heard 300 just got, like, standing ovation in Europe or something for when it screamed.
They stood up when they booed.
I still love how Jerry Duggan described 300 as that movie is going to be beaches for dudes.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, absolutely. Ass kicking and, you know.
It's got
monsters and blood.
With the guy from Children
Gerard
of Men.
Gerard something?
Clive Owen's in it, yeah.
Clive Owen is in the movie? The director?
I don't think so.
Or the writer?
I think he is.
Clive Owen's the actor. He's the guy that was Dwight in Sin City.
I'm almost 100%
sure. No, that's not Clive Owen. It's a different British guy that's playing. It's Gerard something, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he's in 300.
If you Google Clive Owen in 300, you might get
something.
Oh,
maybe he is. Look it up, somebody.
I'm just telling you.
But anyway, going back to
Three
Geeks. And
then go see Three Geeks.
Yeah, and then when you're done watching 300...
You
know, and really in the weeks ahead, I assume that we'll be talking about the various movies.
Oh, 300 and Ghost Rider.
Oh, sure. Ghost Rider. I wanted to go see Ghost Rider tonight, but Tom wasn't into it.
Mm-hmm. I look like Nicolas Cage, according to my girlfriend's
family.
I'll
go tomorrow if you want
to go. All right, guys. Action figure fans and fans of Marvel Zombies, rejoice. We got some Marvel Zombie action figures coming out.
Yeah, these are pretty cool looking. They're doing the Spider-Man and...
looks like the actual, like the posable action figures to get really dorky.
Why aren't they doing like two different
points of articulation?
The ones with points of articulation.
Points.
They're gonna be like $20 from what I saw. But
can
then
the zombie Spider-Man pick his own ass that has been chewed away from other zombies eating it?
Not sure on that one.
He has a removable leg.
Not sure.
Well, they're also doing a statue based on the Spider-Man Mary Jane wedding. Rip-off that they did for Marvel Zombies number 5.
No, it's not a rip-off. It's an homage.
Whatever. It is. It's
a rip-off.
And that looks really cool, the statue, but I'm not really
into it. I love Soydum's covers on that.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my God. They're amazing.
Yeah, fantastic.
No, they're
well, he just did the Ghost Rider.
I'm going to wait for the 6th edition of the action figures.
Yeah, the A3 printing of the action figures.
Of the action
great.
Figures. Did you guys see the fact that Marvel Zombies is like the second number 2 selling graphic novel?
Behind like, Aliens and Cowboys?
No. last month. Yeah, I mean, that's to me, this book has got legs that's just amazing.
Well, is it going to be an evergreen book, though?
I doubt it.
It's the Frampton Comes Alive.
Yeah.
Everyone.
I think
20 years from now, you guys are all going to be able to get them for a buck.
Well, you know, no, I mean, well, seriously, in 3-4 years, are we going to look at book scan numbers and say, wow, there's Marvel Zombies still at number, 50?
Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, it was such a great sort of perfect storm kind of thing because, I mean, the series came out, it sold out really well. They didn't print a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
They did some reprints, but they didn't even do that many reprints of it.
But they had to keep reprinting. Yeah.
But then the hardcover comes out at an amazing price point, and it was like, the thing just, you couldn't go wrong with it. It had built up a ton of buzz by the time that hardcover came out, and nobody could get the original issues anymore because they were skyrocketing in price. And you come out with a hardcover that was, 19,
yeah,
20
bucks?
It was 20 bucks.
Yeah.
And I just think it was sort of like a combination of the right time, the right price, the right,
Plus having Kirk, I mean, it was Kirkman doing Zombies in the midst of Walking Dead. Everyone's excited. Soydum's covers were incredibly, incredible and well-received.
Have we seen just the regular trade yet?
No.
It's
the hard
just the hardcover.
Wow, so it hasn't even gone to trade yet. When that puppy comes out at $11.99, I think you're going to see another spike on this.
If it does,
it
do you
will.
Think they will?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, they
are
will.
You kidding me? Sure. Sure,
squeeze
absolutely.
Everything out of it. Yeah.
All right, some sad news coming down. Archie Comics informed us that Joe Edwards had passed away.
Yeah, he was a great artist. He was 85 years old, and he had a very long history with the company, going back to Golden Age characters like the Comet and the Shield. And a personal favorite of mine that I always read as a kid was Little Jinx. I don't know if you guys, how much Archie you guys read.
Honestly, I never really got into the Archie too much.
I have friends who, when I talk to them about comic books, the only comic books they read are Archie. I have a friend who, all through high school, shoplifted Archie Digest.
That's awesome.
That's quite the friend.
That's awesome. Yeah.
My wife, the only
this is out to you, Greg.
My wife, the only comics she ever read were Richie Rich or Casper. Those were the only comics. And she's still, like, to this day, if I go to a comic shop, and I'll pick her up some Richie Riches, like, you know, quarter books, and I'll throw, you know, she loves them.
It's a very unique, I mean, he and my friend's not the only one. Like, I have a couple friends who, they're big Archie fans for whatever pop culture sort of shtick that had for them.
I mean, Edwards did do work for Timely, which was Marvel back in the 30s and 40s, and he also did some work for Dell, but yeah, his big claim to fame was working all those years with Archie, and yeah, Little Jinx was this little blonde girl, and, you know, kind of like the same vein as Little Archie, but just great little kid comics and stuff like that, so I was saying where Joe Edwards died.
Well, he did have a long life, and
we hardly knew ye, Joe.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, you reading Anita Blake? Anybody here?
No.
I read the first issue of it, and not that it was bad or anything. I mean, actually, I thought it was pretty decent, but it just wasn't like something I was really looking for.
I was going to say, because we're going to be in New York next week, and they're going to have a convention special there. So
it's a big hit.
It is a huge hit.
Well, I think it's geared towards a different audience than, like, us, middle-aged.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, has
white dudes that
Anita Blake been selling well here?
The comic book?
Pretty well, yeah.
Yeah? That's.
Is it bringing in any new readers, any non-comic readers?
Not really.
No?
Okay.
Because, yeah, I mean, I think it is that chicks who dig vampire kind of crowd.
Kind of, yeah. Or like the emo-ish, you know, gothy Sandman kind of. Which, that's great. I hope they enjoy it.
They take that away from me and go enjoy it.
It's one of those weird books. It's one of those weird books that has this like level of success that's separate from your own understanding. You know, when you have
you don't quite grasp the.
You're like, book is doing really well because it doesn't enter your radar.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the interesting thing about Anita Blake to me. It's like, read the first one and it was good.
It was
just
good.
Wasn't
well, that
what
was
I would want to read.
Exactly.
The rest of it.
Exactly.
Like,
that's it. Wasn't it was like, there's nothing wrong with it. It was a good book. It wasn't my personal taste.
The Dabble Brothers books in general, when they were with Alias and now that they are with Marvel, they are very high quality books. I mean, the art is gorgeous.
Oh, they do good stuff.
The stories are very well written. Yeah, it's a question of do you like the genres that they're writing
or
not.
So if you're in New York at the con, they're going to have a convention special there that's going to be drawn, a cover drawn by Brett Booth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check it out then.
You got that. We're talking about Marvel Zombies having some real staying power.
Zombies.
More Zombies. Walking Dead number 34 continues to sell. Sold out and now is going back to press.
This is something that kind of intrigues you, Tom. I know
Tom,
that you're amazed at how
this is one of these weird things. I love The Walking Dead. It's a book I pick up and I love it. But it's this book that sort of defies, I think, when people talk about what drives the single issue market and they come up with all the parameters, The Walking Dead continues to gain single issue readers and defies all those
The Walking Dead gives the middle finger to pretty much the entire comic book industry. It is just totally.
It's such a weird thing. It has the bumps at the end of the trades, which means there's the implication that people read the trades and then move to the single issues, which to me just is mind blowing that happens. I mean, there's no heart. I mean, with everything in comic books and selling, there's no hard proof of any of this. There's But it's just. It's so weird to me.
It defies logic of the industry that the book does what it does. Well, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Is one that, you know, when that book first started coming out, it was very low key. Nobody was really reading it at first. It was extremely good.
Yeah.
And then every time somebody found out about that book, they told 12 different people.
Yeah.
And the word of mouth on it has just become amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't begrudge the success. I think it's awesome that he's doing this, but
it is a little odd that it just has continued at this point, you know, 34 issues into it, and it just seems to not only is it not slowing down, it keeps gaining momentum.
It reminds me of Sandman.
Issue by issue. It took a while for people to catch on to it.
Had there been a previous issue of Walking Dead before 33 that sold out? that had a second printing?
I think the first. The first, like, torture one, I think, sold
out. Well, 33 sold out, but before 33, had any Walking Dead sold out?
I don't think they ever had a second printing of it. If it did, it was only because it was printed in such a low number because they weren't expecting it to,
Fits into my whole... They certainly haven't reprinted any. About the sellouts, about... The weird thing about the math behind a sellout is also an extremely weird thing, because...
What is a sellout?
What exactly kind... Is it... Because to me, a sellout has almost become not – it's what you expect plus X amount, but then sometimes you don't guess it right. And it's become such a weird thing because I think the big two have their own weird sellout.
There's a difference between sellout and sell-through.
Yeah.
And is it a sellout if you – and I'm not accusing Image or Walking Dead of doing this, but is it a sellout if – say you normally sell 15,000 copies, and for this issue you print 12,000.
Well, I think the thing though is, I think it is a big deal for an independent book to sell it from Diamond, much bigger than it is of
DC and Marvel.
A DC book to sell it from Diamond.
Well, I mean, you're selling out a print run, which a print run may be 20,000 books, for an end of a really
do
very,
we know
very
what Walking Dead sells at numbers wise?
Is it? It's 15?
16? But yeah, it keeps gaining.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That high?
Yeah, it's
decent. It does well. It gets bumps from the trades, and the trades keeps... all of the trades, every single trade is in the top,
50 or 100.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing. This book is just amazing, the legs it has and what it's selling.
Way to go, Kirkman.
I keep remembering, when it first came out, and there was, four or five issues out, and I kept seeing it at my comic shop, and I never picked it up. I'm like, another zombie book. Who the hell wants it? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want anything to do with this book. And then I don't even remember why I picked one up. I don't know if I heard something or read something on the internet or something. I picked up, issue 6, and it was like, why is not everyone on the planet reading this book? It's so good.
You talk about comic speculating, and you're not ever going to make money by picking up Green Lantern number 1. Doesn't mean it's not a good book, because it was, but they print how many?
They print enough so everyone can get one.
Bazillions. Right. Walking Dead number 1, if you want to talk about an expensive book to buy right now, they printed 5,000 copies of that book.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's one of those odd. I mean, it's like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What were those first print
runs? What were the expectations?
Of that book. It's like nobody expected that. And it's, I mean, it's certainly. Amazing. It's
congratulations, Sarah.
You're going to have much better speculator by buying those.
Yeah, but we hate those people.
Yeah, we hate them. So. All right, guys. Red 5 Comics is the newest player on the comic publishing circuit.
Uh-huh.
It's Paul Enns, who's the former director of Lucasfilm StarWars.com, is getting into the comic book business.
And Scott Chitwood, the co-founder of the Force.net, he also did ComingSoon.net and SuperheroHype.com. So it's a bunch of guys that are a couple of guys who've done a bunch of website promotion, sort of like fan website stuff that have become extremely popular, and now they're publishing comics, which is kind of interesting. I don't know what they know about publishing comics, but
we're going to find out.
The books look good. I mean, they have five books they're working on already, and they look pretty good. So I always welcome a new publisher.
One guy in particular who you always remember fan films when they come out, and one of the ones that stands out is Troops.
Oh, Troops, that was,
And Kevin Rubio is doing a book called The Abyss, and he did Troops. So
Troops is an amazing fan film. That was unbelievable. Yeah, it's kind of weird how they're kind of using the internet to create this company in a lot of different ways, from their own popularity of the sites they built, parlaying that into a publishing company, and then getting talent from people that have done stuff online. It's amazing how the internet creates opportunities for people to showcase some abilities that they may never have, nobody had known about before.
No, that's the democratic beauty of the internet, and I think these guys are smart, sticking close to sci-fi and film genres. And I think they're
they've
got a base of their own website to draw from, and alert people about the project. So this is a great way to test exactly how well you know, doing a, creating an audience for one form of entertainment might, you know, transfer over to this other entertainment.
So if you want to check out more about their books, I think you can go to, I think it's red5studios.com. It's not in front of me, but go to our website. There's the news story there, and the website is in there if you want to check out their stuff. So good luck to them.
All right, guys. Kids Love Comics is kicking off at the NYCC. It's Kids Loves Comics is a collection of all ages creators publishing, promoting literacy through graphic novels. So they're going to be at the New York Comic Con. You can check them out at booth 939. Is that who Comic News Insider is working with?
I don't know if it's the same literacy. Charity literacy. I'm not. It might be, but. But this is a cool. They're also doing a cool thing. If you go once again, if you go to the news story and there's two websites you can check out in relation to this, where they have like these cards that you can print out about the books. They're like trade cards, you know, like baseball cards, but they're the comic books. And if you bring them to the show, they bring at least like three of the six that are out there. You can trade them in on like an exclusive book or something like that.
Oh,
so
nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, you know, to try and get kids. So if you got kids, and I look, you know, these books are really great stuff, and they got you know, a lot of good talent on the books, and they're all geared towards kids, so that's a good thing.
Hey, that's how I started reading. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure that's probably the case with most of you guys. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
First things I read, and that's what I did with my little nephew who's 11 and isn't crazy about reading regular books. I keep giving him comic books, and at least he's reading those.
And it's Get Caught Reading is who Comic News Insider is going to be holding a raffle to benefit at the New York Comic Con.
So very cool.
Both very good programs and causes there. Diamond is 25 years old.
Sorry, I don't see that as a celebration. I see that more as a sad story, quite frankly.
You know, I was thinking about this when I read this story the first time, and, you know, it's like, anytime Diamond is brought up, it's a negative, you know, there's a negative connotation with the company. But how much is that is really their fault? I mean, is it their fault that they
Did you recently hear that in North Korea 99% of the people turned out to vote for Kim Il Sung?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't mean to rip on Diamond. When people announce like 25 years of Diamond, like really honestly, like was there any threat recently that Diamond was going to
go away?
It has like a weird comedic sense of the same way that 99% of people in the Soviet Union turned out to vote for Stalin. Like,
Mark is a better person to ask about this.
Well, no, I'm not trying to.
I've got somewhere to go.
Exactly.
No, you know, but that's not necessarily. Diamond took advantage of a situation that was created by the publishers and the industry as a whole. Now, as a business, if you worked for Diamond, you would consider that a good thing. Now, these, you know, it's like Diamond is this evil entity. Well, you know what? There's a lot of people that work for Diamond, you know, comic distributor, that aren't necessarily evil people.
Of course not.
I'm just saying, it's like, as a business, they took advantage of a situation. That's not necessarily inherently evil.
But it doesn't mean you have to be like Diamond's awesome.
Well, no, I'm not saying that, but it's like, it's just funny that you can't, it's like Diamond has never done anything good for the comic industry. Who knows if Diamond wasn't able to take advantage of the situation, didn't do what they did, what state comics would be in today? I'm just trying, you know what I mean? It's like, we easily attack them like that.
Well, it's easy because you can't attack anyone else.
Well, yeah, but that's not their fault.
And I see where you're coming from.
You know what I mean? It's I blame Diamond because no one else is being able to get their shit together.
But here's the thing, though. Anytime something bad happens with distributing or any problem that comes up, it is in your only place to put blame is Diamond. Not anywhere it goes, where anywhere you want, you can say that Diamond took advantage of this or Diamond did this. But you know what? It's Diamond, and that's where the blame lies. I mean, that's where, when people complain about distributing, it's because Diamond is the only place to distribute.
Yeah, but a lot of times people complain about distributing because it's a monopoly. That's not something that, I mean, I don't understand how you can blame Diamond for being a monopoly. They took advantage of a situation that was created by Marvel mostly because they couldn't. They thought they knew what they were doing and they fucked up and this, you know, it created this vacuum.
Well, Cap
and
City
Diamond,
too.
You know, Cap City, you know what I mean. It's like
the
I understand,
that run
what, but it's like
Diamond,
it's inherently
don't eat children or don't like
sacrifice
children.
You know what I mean?
That's,
like,
that's the thing that I've always heard, and honestly, I don't remember the specific details, but I've spoken to vendors through the years about this. It isn't a through simple attrition that Diamond suddenly found itself to be the only player.
No. Certainly.
And again, they're the one place to get comics. It is what it is. It does make it difficult for any competitors to come in and try and do, anything else. I don't know. I get my books monthly, I guess, but again, I'm not going to celebrate a monopoly.
Spin on things, we've talked about it before, but I don't know if Diamond ever came up.
If your brother worked for Diamond, though, would you celebrate it? Well, that's what I mean.
I worked for a giant channel, but I worked for CBS.
A giant corporation, but I also don't think that my giant corporation is
great.
Yeah, the most awesome thing.
I worked for CBS for 10 years, and they were huge, and had huge dominance in broadcasting. When they bought our independent stations, literally, I'm like, Jesus, we're working for Chaos. Or we're working for Smush all of a sudden, every bad secret agent.
Like I said, I mean, I'm not trying to
Hydra.
Defend
like,
every.
All of a sudden, we're working for
I'm
Hydra.
Not trying to defend everything that Diamond has done, but at some point, it's like we just immediately,
Well, I'm not celebrating the silver anniversary.
All right,
it's a bloody anniversary.
Sorry, Steve.
When we talk about Diamond, the first thing
Stalin
that comes
just
up,
hit 10,
is that there
and one.
Is that there,
like Hitler? Diamond
that there
Hitler,
And we've talked about digital distribution. As things start to go digital in comics, how much
that will be the test?
Yeah,
that will be the test.
How much?
That's a good point.
How much of a fight do you think Diamond is going to put up against the major comic publishers to not do that?
Yeah, but for them, of course they're going to do that. Why? What do they want to go out of business? How stupid would that be for them to not fight that?
So,
if I worked for Diamond, I would be 110% behind them doing that.
So do you think that the...
But that's not evil. That's not wrong of them to do that.
What do you think the comic publishers are going to do? Do you think they're going to try and make Diamond a part of that or see that
as their
chance to
kind of get out? I don't think the comic publishers give a shit who distributes what they do as long as they make money. I mean, what do they care if Diamond or me... distribute, if I could come up with a better way of distributing their comics than Diamond, they don't have any. I mean, I'm sure Marvel or DC isn't like, I love Diamond Comics specifically. I love Diamond distribution.
All my point is, everybody hated AT&T until they fucking broke it up, and then the phones never worked, ever again. So I don't know.
But I understand what you're saying.
Now it's all heading back the same way, and everyone hates it again.
Let's talk about something fun here. we talked a little bit about 300, the movie, but it looks like another Frank Miller work is going to be making its way there, and that's Ronin.
Ronin, which was a great book. And,
God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that
Jesus
was
Christ,
yeah. And, it's funny, when the Robert De Niro movie Ronin came out, which is a fine film in its own right,
sure.
But I thought at first that was
Ronin
for Frank Miller. I was so excited, then I was a bit disappointed to find out.
That it wasn't.
Although the Bobby De Niro Ronin has maybe the best car chase scene ever.
It'll be interesting if Ronin keeps its name because of that.
That's a very good point.
I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Ronin's not that old.
Right.
You're right
about that. And it'll probably become Frank Miller's Ronin.
Frank Miller. Something like 300. Like 300 has become Frank Miller's 300.
That's true. And given the success of Sin City, it's likely that the Frank Miller brand better be on top of Ronin to make it sell.
Yeah.
I think it will. And if you
haven't read that graphic novel,
Ronin?
Must read.
I mean, the art in that is of his.
Why doesn't that get mentioned? Everyone talks, kind of almost in this order of, Dark Knight Returns,
Sin City,
Daredevil. That seem to be,
they're familiar with,
But no one ever seems to talk about Ronin.
I think the time that it came out, it wasn't, it was an odd enough direction for him to take. I mean, when Ronin first came out, it was at a time where you didn't see that much non-superhero stuff from guys like him.
Yeah, but I also think it has
to some degree.
I also think because it came out around the same time as things like Lone Wolf and Cub, which was like manga coming from a
right.
I mean, I think it almost had that perception of here's an American who clearly loves Japanese style comics and stuff and is trying to do his own spin on it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it has
you're absolutely right.
I think when people are really pressed, Ronin makes the list. But you're right, it doesn't make it very high, and it should because I think it's the Ron Miller before he became Frank Miller.
Right.
Name above the title. Yeah. And I think it's an excellent work. And yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's another book that I, doesn't DC own the rights to Ronan?
Yep.
Yep. And they
interesting director choice. They announced that Gianni Nunari mm-hmm. has been announced and
from Stomp the Yard.
Stomp the Yard. The, yeah, which is an interesting. Yeah. I don't know what.
Sylvie,
you know,
White from Stomp
along
the Yard.
With this, which I was actually very happy to see. Whenever this was being announced about Ronan, there's also talk about Warren Ellis's Ocean coming.
Yeah,
to the
but you know what? Warren actually, on his blog or whatever, on his message board, he kind of refuted that, saying that there hasn't really been any talks about okay. that. So that was put out by. Oh, you know what? I got the name screwed up. Gianni Nunari is a producer of the film.
He's actually produced 300.
Exactly.
Sylvia
and
White.
Sylvian White
yeah, Sylvia.
Is the director. But Gianni, in a press conference, they asked him what other comic book stuff would you be interested in doing, and he mentioned Ronin, but then he also threw in Warren Ellis's Ocean, but even though there doesn't seem to be... I mean, there might be now, but at the time, it doesn't seem
kinda
like that's...
Kind of like the same way Mark Miller said that Boy Be Great if Eminem were at a star and not
yeah.
wanted.
And everyone...
And
yeah, exactly.
And everyone's like, kinda... hey, put the brakes on. Nobody's talking to Eminem about this. And
so we don't know about Ocean, but Ronan, it seems like, is certainly going to be coming. And I think, you know, I think Frank Miller is, at this point, if 300 is a success, that guy's going to have carte blanche to do whatever the hell he wants.
Well, it's like John said, know. Then all of a sudden Frank Miller becomes a branding tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Sure,
no,
sure.
He is on the cusp of truly...
Oh, 300
you know,
is going to rock. 300 is going to it's gonna solidify him.
Well, and it's funny because you think of Miller's, Mark Miller's concern that, you know, God, we're losing all these great comic talents to Hollywood. I think, you know, this could happen with Frank. I mean, I think he still loves to draw, and he has never made any implication of, oh, Hollywood wants me, goodbye, see you later.
Well, he's doing the spirit now.
No, but at the same time, he's put out a pretty, I mean, you know, how much stuff has Frank really done in the last decade?
Not a ton.
In comics. He hasn't done
a little
ton. You know what I mean? He put out a ton
of
stuff.
And obviously Dark Knight Returns.
Well, that
and
was
certainly All-Star Batman and Robin, which we're still waiting.
Yeah
but Dark Knight Returns was...
The
was that?
DK2?
Yeah.
It was DK2. Early 2000s. Sure.
Was it that early?
Hell yeah.
You know, I'm sitting here.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now,
actually, I
want to
say it was 2001? Yeah, something like that. Because
yeah.
it was definitely... It wasn't the 20 years for Dark Knight. It wasn't 2005.
It was 15, I think.
But I think it was... Yeah, I think it was like 15. I think so. It was like 2001.
Well, even though, I mean,
but Holy
his Terror production, you know, is good. You know, he's put out enough comic work. It's not like he's running away from comics. But.
Well, I understand that,
nah,
but it's
he's
because
on the
he's
other
been busy
side.
With the movies.
Yeah.
He's on that other side, I think. He's gotten past the point where his prime comic book producing era
is probably,
not.
By prime, you mean volume, not
volume.
Really
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
oh, no,
he's
yeah.
not
yeah.
going to be putting out
a monthly book, obviously.
No, I understand.
With
what do you guys do? You guys like comics?
No,
I do.
I thought we were doing a car show.
Like,
do you like Jeeps?
Like Robin Williams? Or
now you can combine the two because Jeep and Marvel are putting together a promotion where you can write the hero of their comic being a Jeep Patriot.
I want to write a story where he kills himself in his Jeep Patriot.
That's kind of. Dark.
Sad.
It's very sad.
Dark. Man, it's
very
dark.
What's wrong
serious.
With you, man?
isn't this funny that...
it goes right to Vertigo,
I think
man.
People were kind of snickering at Rush City, the DC Pontiac combination.
Well, I know I was. A ton.
I'm
well,
still
know,
snickering.
You know, honestly, I talked to Chuck Dixon about it in Orlando, and I saw him at the FX Con, and he said Marvel was one of the suitors, and actually a couple of the publishers, because it is money. I mean, this is the
sure.
I mean,
it takes money.
I don't
to
blame
them,
but also I'm not going to feel obligated to say that.
Oh,
I think it's totally awesome.
Well, you know what's funny? In this
has
case,
anybody read Rush City?
I read the
it's
first
okay.
issue.
Is it okay?
Yeah, yeah,
I haven't read it.
Yeah, it was a car advertisement.
It's not
I was like
it's
instantly
not Chuck Dixon's
you know,
best. In my
I
opinion.
Have to say
it's
I was
in the DC universe.
I was
Black Canary's in it.
Instantly turned off just because of the whole car thing. You know what I mean? I look at it like... As soon as I heard that, it's like, oh, well, it's just a market. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's an ad. It's a giant ad. I'm not going to...
The difference, though, and I'm surprised they're not taking advantage of it, although
Jeeps,
I guess it's a
Jeeps
golden...
Jeeps are totally awesome.
No, there's a Golden Age Marvel character called the Patriot.
That's true.
And if you know, well, this is kind of Invaders, Sal. So do you remember the Patriot?
Sure, yeah.
And I'm surprised that, you know, I guess you can't really tie that in, but maybe you could in terms of continuity and stuff. That maybe this is a descendant of the
Patriot.
The Patriots.
Well, the
Dark Horse Drive or the Driver. The BMW series, I like those.
Well, that was based on the ads from BMW, right? Those
were in the Clive Owen short films. But again,
they were good short films.
Commercial.
Well, the one thing about this though is like this isn't. They're not like selling a comic book. They're doing a promotion where you go online to the Jeep Patriot website, and you write the story. It starts out to give you the first two pages, and then you submit
someone,
a story for the next page, and they're going to create
pipe into the car.
Yeah, but that's what Rush City is.
It's a Vertigo series.
Sold at Pontiac dealerships and everything. I mean, that's where they're giving them away and stuff like that.
No, but this isn't. You're not. I mean, they're not selling a Jeep Patriot comic book. They're just doing a promotion where you come as a fan of Marvel Comics and write the story.
Or
and
they'll put together as a community.
Yeah, it's a different spin on the same.
Yeah. All right. Hey, guys. Aaron
Suicide
Eckert.
One, guys. Write it.
Aaron Eckert is, it's been announced, will be taking the role as Harvey Dent and Two-Face in the upcoming...
we have a nice picture of Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, we do.
Show notes.
This is thank you,
like that?
Thank you for smoking.
I started to make the show notes more interactive.
Yeah, I kind of like it. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
No, I think it's great casting. I think Aaron Eckhart's an excellent actor. I think he mostly does good films every now and then. Black Dahlia, he doesn't. But I think he's a good choice.
And what about Billy Dee?
He was wonderful.
Colt 45 works every time.
Colt 45. Tommy Lee should have been a great
when I
want to
tag some ass, I pop open a cold Colt 45.
It always works.
It always works.
I just love when Billy you break D. into Williams. Italian and say, hey, kind of be a, that's hey.
You're
black.
I was like, Billy, I lost a Millennium Falcon in a card game.
Exactly.
And so we've
got that.
It's not my fault.
The thing I'm most interested, though, is that the sexy Maggie Gyllenhaal is not denying
sister
or
to replacing what's his name Gyllenhaal
Jake
Gyllenhaal
that's her,
they're both actually very
she's
good
not denying or confirming that she'll be replacing the wooden Katie Holmes.
Yeah, she is. I was gonna say wooden as well. Glad you
Heath
said that.
And
Bruce
Brokeback
Mountain have always been
and
so
Heath
troubled.
Ledger's gonna be the Joker.
You're right.
That is kind of interesting. Except for
the Scientology hypnotize face going in that movie very badly.
Batman Returns.
Yeah, she was probably the worst part of that film, and
she's just
Maggie Gyllenhaal is the actress that I have the deal with my girlfriend where if I could sleep with anyone.
Oh, she's on the list.
Did you see
Owen Wilson?
Did you see the Secretary?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, that's great too.
Oh, fantastic.
She's great in Stranger Than Fiction too.
Sure.
Will Ferrell film.
That movie is especially funny if you do anything with taxes. I laughed my ass off.
Sure.
Although
Creative Artists Agency aren't denying or confirming that she'll be taking the part of Rachel Dawes.
I would
replacing
count on some
Katie.
Sort of change. Because,
Katie. Well, they already said that she wasn't coming
back. There you go.
So.
Scientology.
And that whole
Scientology.
That whole thing with her and Cruz, that killed both movies. It hurt, I should say, it didn't kill them. It hurt those movies.
I hear that Posh Spice and the soccer player
David,
are both
Beckham,
they're going
Beckham.
To be sewed together Bennett, and play the part of Rachel Dawes in the new movie.
No, that would be interesting. I don't care. The first Batman, that Batman Begins was so phenomenally good. To me, that is still the best superhero comic book movie that's ever been done.
Ooh.
But that's my opinion.
The only thing that maybe
the first Superman, actually, the first Superman's probably better just because it
I don't know. It's funny. I love the first Superman movie, but I kind of like the fact that Batman took itself a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, I did too.
I think there's
a cool thing between those two
that Christopher Reeve and Christian Bale, I both think did like a very serious job of playing. I mean, like when I think of Superman, I still think of Christian Reeve.
Christian. Oh, sure, yeah.
Christopher Reeve. But when I think of Batman, I think Christian Bale did such an amazing job of playing
Bruce Wayne
in such a believable way.
No, that's why I like Eckert as Harvey Dent. I think, you know,
wasn't Eckert a name of a cop in the Tim Burton?
Yes.
Wasn't that the dirty cop?
And I think
you're living in the
Eckhart,
Matrix.
And I think he was year one. I think that was a year one character as well. I want to say in the Miller.
Was it?
Yeah, he's right.
Oh man, they're breaking down the fourth wall.
Wow.
I'm freaking out.
No, but that, you know, that's
just Godland.
I'm kind of
Eckhart. Year and one, he shoots Harvey him. Dent, I can't remember
that really did help Bruce or I should say Batman and Jim Gordon.
Now the only thing that worries me about this is they've already talked about the Joker's going to be in the second one. Now you got Harvey Dent, and wasn't there a report of somebody else, some other villain?
Hey.
I mean, that was the problem with the Tim Burton Bat. It's like all of a sudden you had three friggin' villains.
You can introduce Harvey Dent, you don't necessarily have to introduce two.
If Aaron Eckhart is going to play Harvey Dent, he's not just going
to. Well, I think what will happen is, and I'm hoping, and I haven't read any scripts to say that this will be the way, but
what do you know, John? Tell us. At least two-thirds of the movie, pardon my spit,
Harvey Dent, maybe he gets the acid during this movie, and Two-Face really does
the
become
next
the
one?
Third villain. Yeah, I think that's the plan.
I would love to see that, certainly.
Because you want to give a chance for people to give a shit about Harvey Dent and Two-Face.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the problem for me, like with Batman 2.
And Tom, in the fourth movie.
But especially the
Mirror
second.
Mirror Master.
But especially the second one.
Oh, sure. And the third. Tommy Lee Jones was wasted when
he was
Harvey Dent.
Yeah, certainly, because he was, Jim
Carrey
just completely.
You try and jam four villains into a movie.
And then, of course, with Arnold and you had Uma Thurman and you had Bane and you had everybody in that movie. And it sucked, really.
I will freeze your city.
All right.
It sucked ass. All
right, guys, we got some January sales numbers.
Oh, no.
Came out.
Can we go through every number?
Yes.
All 500 comic books?
No, probably the big thing is that as much bitching and moaning, and probably rightfully so, that goes on about Civil War, about people being upset about it being delayed, about the people not liking a lot of the stories going on.
I never said that.
A lot of people have. But I tell you what, it dominated the sales in January.
You know what completely blows my mind about Civil War is how it sold twice as much as anything else. Like, where is this audience that's buying Civil War that...
Really?
I mean, that over twice. Think about how many numbers of people...
I don't know.
Like,
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but this number is based on how many comic shops bought issues, not how many people... How many issues of Civil War number 6 do you have left on the shelves?
Pretty fair.
Well, there's that. There you go.
So there you go. I mean, how many copies of this number are sitting on shelves somewhere?
And they're sitting.
And
but
how
I
many
just think
have
it's.
Sold?
I think it's a weird perception thing too, because you see all these other books also that have the Civil War tag on it, and you have Amazing Spider-Man, who's 4 on the list with 158, and then you have Civil War number 6. It amazes me in a weird way that Amazing Spider-Man is ordered at. You know, that the Civil War ones ordered twice as much as Amazing Spider-Man. Because to me, Amazing Spider-Man is a title that would
You had a lot of mainstream media hitting on Civil War. So that may have influenced comic shop buyers.
I understand why there's so many. I mean, to me, it just seems weird that you have this title to me that's like a top line title that's getting ordered twice as much. I'm like, is there really an audience for something that twice as much as Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And maybe there isn't because
That's what drives me nuts about the diamond numbers. It doesn't really tell
It's a weird thing because you look at it and it doesn't make necessarily sense. Because as Mark is telling us, he's got a ton of number 6. Well, now it makes sense to me that
with the barcode, the universal price code, it surprises me that, and maybe they don't want us to really know what the real numbers are. Because the other thing is, it's not 350,000, 357,000 copies of Civil War number 6.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't matter. Why would they want to know? Why would they want to know the final sales numbers? Because all that will affect is how many comic shop owners change their orders.
Right.
You know what I mean? The only numbers that are important to them is how many books are ordered by comic shop owners. It doesn't matter how many of us buy books. It only matters what the comic shop owners.
Right.
They don't care what the real number is, because all the real number will do is change how comic shop owners.
Right, and that'll lessen the publishers.
Exactly.
I think the whole thing with Civil War, not talking about the quality of Civil War as a book.
Yes.
The ordering pattern is how far away the Civil War main series has come from everything else as it's gone along.
It's just blown away.
How much people are ordering that, and maybe not necessarily selling through on all of it, but I think it's it's interesting how that has become so inflated from the first one. To
right.
The,
well, I think in the sales numbers, we see that, that Civil War is really top weighting this. But I think another great part of the story is that 52 continues to be a heavy hitter, having five of the top 13 books. And
if you're far, it'd be weird to drop it, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's like a whole stretch. You know what? 41 wasn't that good. Screw the rest
of them. About 40 of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Mark said it best. He said it's great for him. It's great for Dark Tower to have, you know, four times a month a weekly book that sells as good as one of his best monthly books.
My keenly and very sharply tuned...
As the three of us just look at you with, like, okay, where's this going?
My very sharply tuned instincts tell me that 52 probably won't be the last weekly book we see come out from major publishers.
Yeah. I think just maybe someone might start publishing almost immediately when their current one ends.
I think
some competition.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're going to
see more weekly comics.
Uh-huh. Which,
despite their protests to the...
Which I don't think it's not a bad thing.
To the contrary.
Hey, you know what?
As long as they're
if
good.
Countdown is as good as 52.
I'll buy it.
If it's a good book.
Well, it's what you put in the week. How you package the weekly. Yeah. It's how you format the weekly that makes it matter.
I just hope Greg Rucka and Jeff Johns and Wade and Giffen and all those
they're not
guys.
Gonna be, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Rucka already said there's no way he's doing another one for at least for a while.
No, and that's why Johns is cutting back on his books and stuff like that. No, everyone's believe me, the people that were involved in 52.
But I think the one good thing is that they may have learned a lot from doing 52, where the next time around it might not be as difficult. You know what I mean? It's like they may have learned how to do. I don't know. Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, I think you're right,
but I also think that learning lesson went into the production of 52 more based on what happened with Marvel Superheroes and Action Comics Weekly 15 years earlier.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some open-ended ones, I think, are going to always have problems.
Yeah, the weekly comic is nothing new. Again, it's how you format it and what is inside that weekly. That's the difference, and that's the question of what they're going to do in terms of these subsequent weeklies.
You mentioned Action Comics Weekly. Tom, why don't you finish up the news with us here. Explain to me what is going on with Action, please.
Action is going – the current storyline with Jeff Johns is going to be delayed for a while until I think it's going to be issue
851.
It's 850. After, 851, 852, and 853.
So three issues.
Yeah, there's going to be three fill-in issues, two by Fabian Nicieza and one by Kurt Busiek. It's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of thing, exactly. I think, because I think you look at something like Civil War and all those, you don't have a fill-in, someone bitches about it. You get the fill-ins, and people bitch about it. It's one of those things where I'm sure Adam Kubert and I'm sure Jeff Johns doesn't want the book to be late. So it's sort of...
And Johns has been very specific in saying, hey, don't blame Donner. It's not Donner's participation that is holding this back.
Pick up the Fabian ones, but, I've been enjoying it so far, so I'll wait. I mean, I'm not...
Well, I thought the most interesting part of this story was after the Last Son arc wraps up, Eric Powell is going to be doing our duty.
The Bizarro story.
Very cool. And that should be really cool.
No, that's the thing, I think...
With John's writing.
When this is on the bookshelf as a collected trade, no one's going to matter. And I think the important thing to know is it's good books sometimes take longer than a monthly schedule will allow for. And it's not a new fucking story.
John's like turning green over here.
Just one of those things
stipulated while I was doing it. It's not a big deal.
It's one of those things with like Civil War. Everyone's like, it's late, or like, oh, I don't want to fill in. Whatever. Just wait for it. You'll buy it.
Well, one last thing before we head off from the news desk. I did want to say congratulations to Chuck Satterley, from Marcosia. His Book of Bitter Souls has been bought up for development from Kickstart Productions, so congratulations, Chuck, on that.
And Bray Fogle, absolutely.
They're hoping to get that out on the Sci-Fi Channel, so
awesome. That's the Kickstart, who also does Painkiller Jane.
Painkiller Jane.
Rockets Hard.
Hopefully that'll work out for him. Way to go, Chuck.
Well, guys, remind everyone out there for the full version of these and other stories, just go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions. All right, guys, that'll do it for the news. Tom, you got drunk.
Again.
Yeah. Not
you,
only...
You stupid, drunken...
Yeah,
you know,
you watched the Packers. And, no. You got drunk. You ordered two copies of The Watchmen. What are you gonna do? Oh, Absolute Watchmen. I'm sorry.
What I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna give it away to someone.
You're crazy.
Mighty nice of you,
can
sir.
Can I have it?
No, you can't. Oh. None of the people that none of the people that work for Around Comics, for like a corporation, can have it.
None of the employees of Around Comics or their family members are eligible for.
What I want is that I wanted people to write sort of a one-paragraph description, sort of tying in Watchmen to a current book that they read. And a lot of people wrote some really creative ones.
If you still are interested in entering the Who Watches the Caters contest, you need to get your submission in by Wednesday.
The 20th.
Yes, Wednesday the 20th. Yeah. We're going to be deciding while we're in New York who the winner is, and our first or second episode back from New York.
We'll probably be drunk.
The 20th is a Tuesday, boys.
Oh, Tuesday?
Yeah.
So tomorrow.
Get in by Wednesday the 21st.
All right, whatever.
Wednesday 21st, midnight. Tom will be at his computer.
Or whatever.
Midnight Central Standard Time or Eastern?
Central Standard
Pacific.
Time. That's what the rest of the world runs on. That. Chicago time.
This, I'm going, this is from Robert Cooper.
Bob Cooper.
I'm going to do this in the voice of Bizarro. Me letting Caters know that this is R.H. Coop from the forum. Me thinking that Caters challenges worst idea ever. Caters ordering two copies of Watchmen is great idea. Me also think that idea of drinking a lot of Jack Daniels and ordering books is a great idea. Me have ordered four copies of Lost Girls, but me has had 15 dates in the last 10 days. So me really need book. Me also think that Caters giving other copy away is a bad idea. There's a really good irony in there that isn't immediately apparent.
No, I caught it, but it is a little hard. It is a little hard to
catch,
follow because
it's
of the Bizarro.
Very funny when you do it. Me not want Absolute Watchmen at all. It is one of worst books ever. It is as bad as Frank Miller's Batman. Me think that none of these books mean anything. None of them had any great points like The Onslaught Reborn does. Me think that this is a great book and great artwork. Me also think that Watchmen had never had any impact on any books and has not been read by smart people. Me think that most smart people have not read it. Me also think that Moore is dumb writer. He writes things that me think that make me think and me not like that. Me also think that Watchmen has not influenced any good writers. Smart writers copy Liefeld and McFarlane in me mind. Image from 90s is best books ever. Me also prefer mutant books with girls with big boobs and guys with costumes that have lots of pockets. Me not like plots at all or any books that make sense. Me also want Caters to know that me writing this message while at party with lots of hot chicks. They want to go out with me, but me not like girls with big boobs and tight tummies. Me like going hogging. We also think that this contest is a dumb idea. Who wants a book that is so stupid? Me must hoping to take book off Cater's hand so he doesn't have to burn stupid book. Me also think me win since me posting on website all the time. Why me not winning? Me not want to know if I win or not. Me hate Around Comics and never listen to episodes. Me hate you guys. Robert Cooper.
Well, thank you, Robert.
You wow. Good review.
Bizarro.
You have good essay.
Thank you. I tell you, I told people to get their entries in. Yeah, don't worry about it.
No, it's not over.
It's not over.
The interesting thing about that is while it was funny and entertaining and very well crafted, it really didn't talk about any parallels between a Bizarro book.
And he might not win.
And a Watchmen. And Watchmen.
But it was a damn entertaining email.
It was entertaining.
And me not like... Win. Oh, sorry. I get lost with Bizarro. You're never quite sure what he's...
Never quite.
He's convoluted
you agree
message.
With him a little bit. You
I do.
With him
part
a
of me...
Part of you, like, all of part of you like wants books to all be, like, Onslaught Reborn. Isn't that true?
That's it,
a
I
little
think.
Bit of you does.
All right, right. Guys. I tell you what. Let's move ahead. Give our reviews for the week. It is time for Top of the Stack.
Top. Top.
Of the Stack.
Of the Stack. Stack. Stack.
That's right. It's time for Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last week. Mr. Caters, start us off.
My Top of the Stack is Godland Book 16, Strange But True. It is 60 cents.
Cheap.
If you haven't picked up this book or haven't read the trades or anything, this is a recap issue that also furthers the story along a little bit. So if you've been reading it already, it doesn't feel necessarily like you're recapping everything that's already happened, but it's also a great introduction. It is written by Joe Casey, art by Tom Scioli. It is Kirby sort of cosmic meets a lot of the Starlin cosmic mixed with a little bit more of a modern sense of humor about it. So there's a little twinge of they know what they're doing. They know that it's a little bit funny and they're not afraid to poke fun at themselves about doing it. If you haven't picked it up, you should. It's only 60 cents. I mean, I guarantee everyone buys one book for $3 that they don't even really like that much. So just pick up Godland or ask your shop to pick up Godland. It's the newest issue is 60 cents. If you don't like it, you know, I'm not going to give you 60 cents because that's ridiculous.
Great ironic humor.
Letter cost 39 cents, you know.
No, it's great. You know what it reminds me of, too, is remember Images 1963?
Yeah.
It has that kind of feeling of knowing what it's making fun of and still having a good
time.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's
the Scioli art is this amazing Kirby-esque art, but I think it benefits tremendously from modern coloring techniques.
Certainly.
And the fact that certain things jump out more than others, and they do a great job of things that are supposed to glow actually really glow, as opposed to maybe some of that. You're going to get Kirby crackle all over your hands if you're reading this. I mean, you're going to, like, your girlfriend's going to be like, where'd this come from? You're going to be like, I don't know what happened. I went to a club.
And even though Casey's the writer, Casey has been behind the design of so many of his last few books, and Godland is no exception in terms of a lot of innovations of what you're describing. Yeah. I mean, that's all Joe Casey.
And the Comic Craft guys.
And that's the thing. I give Joe and those guys a lot of credit for
Starkings
up in the game.
Starkings?
He does the lettering. And Nick Filardi does the colors, and he does a fantastic job because the colors on this book just jump right off the page when you see
it. No, it is. It's a gorgeous thing, and if you like sci-fi, there's no reason why you shouldn't be reading
it. And the cover has a nice, very subtle Crisis on Infinite Earths homage with the every single character that's been in the book being drawn on the cover. And it's a great book, and I love it, and it's cheap. Try it out.
I thought it was more Kingdom Come-ish.
Oh, boo.
Same Sal, what do you got for us this week?
Well, this week I picked Justice Society of America, number 3.
You know, you got called out on the forum. David Price was a little he sided with Tom. He thought you had way too many honorable mentions last week.
Well, I'm only picking one book this week, and David can kiss my ass. But
yeah.
I only say that with love. It, you know, he can pick whatever he wants on his fucking show.
Yeah.
bulletins.
Just kidding, David.
Go listen. David, we love you.
Justice Society of America, written by Jeff Johns, art by Dale Eaglesham, and inks by Rui Jose. Like a lot of us, Tom, I know a lot of times you don't want to pick, you know, mainstream books. Even though you like them, it's like you want to turn people on to other books. With this one, I just couldn't help myself. It was so good. I've enjoyed this series so much. Just in these three issues.
You felt so guilty about this today. We're at lunch, and Sal's like, what are you picking for Top of the Stack tonight? And I'm like, I told him. He's like, man, I got
to
pick JSA.
I had to.
So goddamn good.
If that's the best thing, if I didn't pick up Godland, I would have picked that up.
Yeah, it simply came down to this was the most fun that I had reading a book this week. It was the best book. Well, not even maybe the best book, but I enjoyed it the most this week. And normally when we talk about Jeff Johns has written, we talk about how he does this amazing job of combining nostalgia with new ideas. He really knows the characters. He plants these seeds in the stories that lead to other things later on in the arc. I'm not going to talk about any of that about Jeff Johns. While all of that is in this book, specifically, I want to talk about the art in this book because
Eaglesham
stuff has been amazing, and he's one of the few artists today that I read a book by him and I actually want to see more splash pages because I enjoy his splash pages so much.
The Sandman page gave me goosebumps.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he because he does it in such a way, and I think John's also knows how to use them in a story where they have impact. They're not just a pretty thing that you see. The art in this book is just so good. It's the, you know, a couple of things that really stood out for me. One was Hawkman.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I've ever seen Hawkman's wings with the sort of, you know,
grandeur.
Yeah, and just the size and power that you would imagine a guy with wings on his back would look like. This is the first time I've ever really seen that in a book, and it was really beautiful to see. Second thing was, and I don't know the character's name because I'm just not familiar with her. It's one of these Nazi, neo-Nazi characters. The neo-Nazi speedster. The force of her running through people and just obliterating these people.
It's brutal.
It was so brutal and just so tangible. Amazing.
I had to see if Mark Miller was writing the book for a minute. I started doing what Tom does. I'll find a book I like, and then I'll go to Newsarama and see what some of the posters are saying about it, because you can get some very funny responses. And the best line, I told Sal about this at lunch today, the best line from a poster there was, Hawkman should clobber Nazis in the face in every single comic book.
Hawkman should always be clobbering Nazis in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the third thing in this issue specifically was the final page with Wildcat's son, and I don't want to give anything away, but it's just just another great ending to a book.
Yeah, good image.
And, you know, it's just an awesome image, and it brings up. But the other thing that Inglesham has done in this series, maybe not necessarily this particular issue, but the previous two for sure, is not only has he done amazing action and beautiful stuff, but conveying emotion in a lot of his work. Right. In the first two issues, he's done a fantastic job of.
You look at Wildcat's son, and in three issues, I want to know what happens to Wildcat's son.
Sure.
Though he's never been anything, I immediately want to know what is going to happen to that character, and I care about what happens to.
And maybe what, like, six pages of screen time?
Well,
so
and I think he's done that with a lot of the characters that he's introduced in this new series. And, you know, the new relationships between Liberty Bell and Hourman and.
Yeah.
Stargirl and Cyclone?
Yeah, Stargirl and Cyclone. And
the hint at what Sandman has sort of become.
Sandy Hawkins.
Has become sort of a darker character. And you maybe haven't gotten the explanation, but you've seen that he's obviously a very disturbed person since the crisis.
And
that
not to mention the Legion of Superheroes Starman that is with them, that clearly is still unbalanced.
52!
Yeah, and fun. Little random things, exactly. No, it's a great series, and I give everybody credit that you've mentioned. I think it's tremendous.
Yeah, it just really, you know, like I said, it was
it's
easily...
lived up to its hype.
Yeah, it has lived up to its hype. I've enjoyed it immensely. I'm not steeped in, you know, the history of the JSA all that much. I, you know, like I said, a lot of these characters I don't really know a whole lot about, but I have enjoyed this as much as any superhero book that I've been reading.
Tom, don't you, as someone who is steeped in the JSA history, I want to see these descendants of Golden Age heroes that they kind of throw off these comments, and I want to see stories.
The weird
people.
Thing about you see a character like Steel's grandson or whatever.
Right.
I think Geoff Johns in like three issues has already written a more interesting character than any of the previous Steel characters.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think there's going to be so many interesting things to do with what he's set up in these first three characters that it's going to be. I think it's surpassed Justice League of America as being sort of the DC flagship. If you want to see what DC's about.
Well, yeah, you
the
know, well, Meltzer's run is going to be a limited run.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it's only going to be 13 issues. So Johns is in for the long haul on JSA, always has been, and seems to have been re-energized since that leave of absence with a whole new interesting direction. And also that idea, as you started to say, that this is going to be the book that defines the DC superhero universe.
Yeah.
That the society really represents the nation of DC superheroes, more so than the league does.
And you saw that in the first, I think it was the first issue too, that it's not just going to be about the JSA.
Right,
I mean,
Titans will be in there.
Yeah, you know, you already have those crossovers that he's using to really, you know, ingrain itself in the entire DC universe.
They set it up at the very beginning. The league is a first strike force, and the society is about family and tradition.
And the community. Because isn't it funny because they changed the name from Justice Society to League because they're like, that's not action-oriented enough. And Johns is using society as its strength and saying, no, this is the community of superheroes going from the its beginnings
it's more
to its
than
future.
Just, it's more than just a team.
Right. And
I want to see more real family.
Problem. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's the community.
Sandy's one of my favorite characters.
Oh, absolutely.
When I started rereading comics the second time when he was in JSA.
Yep.
And I want to see more about why he's become such an obviously disturbed person by what's happening to him.
Yeah, great story. All right, as a little preview to this Thursday's episode, I actually didn't pick this book because of our upcoming guest. I picked it because it was good, and that is
you are a kiss ass.
I am coming off as a huge kiss ass.
This everything is, Mark course, Guggenheim's done so far.
Have you read Mark Guggenheim?
This is Mark Guggenheim and Howard Chaykin's Blight, and it's issue number 6, obviously from Marvel Comics, and I really didn't want to like the new Blight series. I didn't need a new series to pick up. It's,
we're massive.
Are you racist?
Yes, I hate vampires.
He is the Tim Hardaway of Blight vampires.
Oh, God, yeah.
No,
I don't like them. I don't agree with it.
No, I know what you mean.
Blight is a character that... You know, and we talk about this on Thursday, so I don't want to spoil it for folks. But you know, you had brought it up that Blade is very popular in movies and more pop culture than it seems in comic books.
I think actually Tom brought that up.
Oh, was it you, Tom? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't want to take credit for something I didn't know.
And as a comic, Blade doesn't really interest me that much. But I really like Guggenheim's work on Wolverine and everything else that he's done. So, you know, and Howard Chaykin. You have to love Chaykin. And so I started picking it up. And John has talked about this. What is great about the Blade series is that they're all self-contained stories. Yep. You get a beginning, middle, and end in every issue. But you also get a lot of other nuggets of
history.
Pieces of stories that add into an overall story. So you're starting to build up a Blade mythology that is largely provided in these great flashback scenes. That Chaykin's art in these flashback scenes is this is Chaykin's strongest work art-wise that he's doing right now, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's his strongest of late.
Yeah.
And what I'll say too is I agree with you. I think this book, I think they knew from issue one that they were going to be living on borrowed time.
Yeah.
And because of that, they wanted to. This is my congestion coming up. They wanted to format it so that, hey, listen, if you're interested in this, you can jump in on any issue. You're not going to be lost. And it's a wonderful story. And it's nice to see that guys can knock out great 22-page stories that matter.
And I also think, Mr. Guggenheim talked about it in our interview with him a bit, is that, you know, when you look at the history of that character, it's very convoluted and open-ended. I mean, even from the beginning, that character kind of came in as a you know, bit player in the universe.
Into the Dracula.
Yeah, you know, and throughout a lot of his appearances in comics, he was used in a way that, you know, he was never established as a character and his history and his mythology. Mm-hmm. And I think they really wanted to re-examine all that and reintroduce him as a real part of the Marvel Universe. And I think they've done a really good job, and it really plays into creating a better book because the stories feel, you know, more evolved and tangible then.
What I like is that they have really redefined this character for them. This is different than any other Blade I've read. It's way
different
than
the movie.
Yeah. It's way different than the TV show. This is Blade as Mark Guggenheim and Howard Chaykin envision this character. There is a great cast of backup villains and, you know, friends that come around both in the flashbacks and in the regular time series.
Yeah, you've already seen Spider-Man, you've already seen Wolverine. I mean, you've seen S.H.I.E.L.D., you've seen those characters. You know, it's very evident that Blade is not the Marvel Universe. Yeah, you know what I mean.
You've seen Santa. If I may, and I could be wrong, and if I am, you guys can make fun of me when it's revealed.
He's
going to
be Captain Marvel.
I think he's Ronan. I think he is
Ronan.
I think Blade is Ronan in the new Avengers.
Really?
And I told Bendis that the other night, and he said nothing, which I expected him to say nothing. But that's my theory.
What leads you to that conclusion?
The fact that he's good with a sword. The fact that he's a good martial artist. That's Blade.
That would blow my fucking mind, John.
I remember 6 months ago, Brian saying, Blade in the New Avengers sounds very interesting.
I would shit my pants at work.
Does it make sense? Because I haven't read the newest New Avengers
I think the new Ronin is actually going to be a woman.
I think another the new woman. Ronin
no,
is
he
you.
Wouldn't make that mistake.
I think the new Ronin is you, the reader.
Well, and I also think there's plenty of time if enough of us guess that it's Blade that Brian will switch things over. But I hope Blade is around long enough. The monthly book that Chaykin and Guggenheim are doing so that it does come through, because I agree with you, Chris. This is a great series and it deserves your attention.
It's Marvel's Jonah Hex.
Yes,
that's
a very good way to look at it. I agree with that.
Your crazy theory
has now got my mind running in 1,000 different directions.
All right.
Ronin has a brief moment of speaking to Luke Cage. It says, "Yo, Cage, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like,
he's obviously a black vampire.
Well, not so much that it was a black vampire, but to me that definitely crossed off Steve Rogers. Because I don't see Steve Rogers saying, "Yo."
Maybe
he would say, "Hello, sir."
Yeah, but when it comes to Ronin, you can't take anything. I mean, because, you know, who knows what
we already had.
I just am amazed. Well, that's what I mean. It's like, I'm just amazed he even brought the character back, and he's doing a whole nother Who is Ronin. It's like, see this song and dance already once?
It better not string it out for 6-8 months, because I won't fucking put up with it.
Well, gimmick aside, this is a wonderful book, and Chaykin is doing very good work. And I know he was thrilled about doing this from the start. It was like, I can't wait to get to Blade. That's what he told me last summer.
Would you be disappointed if Ronin's your mom? Everyone, all the readers' moms.
What are you doing out here?
What are you
mom?
Doing
here?
But
it's
yeah,
mom, that's amazing.
If you're looking for fun, get in, enjoy, get out stories, Blade.
If you're looking for a good time.
If you're looking for a good time, call Tom's mom.
1-800-BLAD.
Ouch.
Call Tom's mom. That's nice. All right, John, what do you got?
One thing I wanted to point out for a quick mention, Candlelight Press sent you guys a whole bunch of books, and one of them was this exceptional sci-fi story called And the Sky Turned White by Carter Allen, who did both the art and the story. And I would say if you're a fan of 2001 and Silent Running and those very interesting sci-fi movies of the early 70s, this is a book for you. It's a woman that is off at the edge of the universe in an outpost, is working by herself. Her only companion is a little cute robot. And things start to go wrong. And that's all I'll say about it. But it was, I think, an excellent graphic novel. A very, again, reminiscent of those kinds of early 70s sci-fi films. And I thought it was incredibly entertaining. Now, for my other pick, it is a mainstream one. It's Batman 663, Grant Morrison and John Van Fleet. And it's funny because I was talking, not to name drop, but Jeremy Hahn and I were talking this week.
No, not like you ever name drop, John.
Exactly, never.
Talking to Jesus and Muhammad, and they both loved it.
The Lord told me, as we were speaking. No, Hans, like, if I wanted to read an illustrated novel, I would have bought a book. Because if you haven't read this book, it is text with illustrations as opposed to the usual panel and dialogue comic book. I think it's great. It's a Joker story. It is reminiscent of Arkham Asylum in both John Van Fleet's art and Morrison's storytelling. And I think when this is collected with this run of Morrison's Batman, it's going to be that same kind of interlude that guys like Denny O'Neill gave us in the past when he would do a text story with minimal illustrations. And I just think it's kind of a rite of passage of great Batman writers that they have a chance to write a prose story as well as writing a comic book story. And it's as vertigo of a Batman story as I think you will see in this run, because I think the descriptions are very graphic. I think you're getting some very interesting dark characterizations of the Joker that have to be conveyed in prose that I don't think could be conveyed in a comic book and have the same kind of impact. So I was really pleased with it. I just think it's an excellent story. And you know, I've been a fan of this run to begin with, but for those of you who don't like reading books, gee, sorry, suck it up. It's certainly worth $3. I mean, it really is. I think a pretty dense story, and I think the Van Fleet illustrations support it very well. And I would say if you liked Arkham Asylum, you'll definitely like this issue.
Well, there you go.
So you're saying you hate Jeremy Hahn now?
No, and I just said, no, and I understand. I mean, you know, he represents
Wait,
a lot of.
How do you feel about Jeremy Hunt?
And as soon as he said it, I started laughing. I'm like, I know exactly what you're going to say. And he was right. I'm like, I know a lot of people feel the same way you do, but it's
Jeremy's a good guy.
It's
hopefully,
good.
Hopefully we'll see him in New York.
I won't. I won't be there.
Sorry, John.
The
really?
Joke.
I thought you were going.
I thought you were going to be there, man.
So. All right, guys, that will wrap up Top of the Stack. Trevor, up in Ontario, we're going to get to your listener Top of the Stack. I promise.
Poor Trevor.
We're just running long today. So Trevor sent in a Top of the Stack on Ultimate Fantastic Four. We're going to get to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's good, and we will play it. But that'll be on our next News and Reviews episode.
Quickly, Sami, thank you very much. Chris Sami sent me a shadow.
Awesome. Very nice.
He's very kind. He told Chris, he's like, hey, I forgot John. Which, you know, I'm Tim Conway. It's okay. Give it to the regulars. Damn, give it to
Well, you mean, Lyle Wagner and Harvey Corman. You mean Corman. Dorf doesn't
he
get one?
He was, very, he was very upset whenever we got our cards from Chris. And Tom said what he got, and Sal said what he got, and I said what I got, and then John goes, and I got a rock.
Well, it was that Charlie Brown thing, man. All I got was a rock.
But now we showed
comics
off,
didn't get anything.
We showed off the shadow that John got, and Mark is like, well, what about me?
Yeah, so Chris, Mark wants a Captain America sketch card. I'll send you an email. Chris Somney, amazing. Check his stuff out at chrissomney.com. Okay, guys. Want to ask you to help us spread the Around Comics love. There is a few different ways that you can do that. You can take us up on our Listener LCS Challenge. You can go to the website, download our flyer, put that up in your local comic shop with permission of the owner or manager there, and we will mention you and the shop on the show. You can also become our virtual friend at ComicSpace. That's www.comicspace.com/aroundcomics. You love the virtual friend part, don't you, Tom?
I think it always makes me laugh.
Chuckle.
It makes me chuckle a little bit. Virtual friend.
You can
my friends are virtual.
You can give us a dig at dig.com, or you can do my personal favorite, the iTunes music review. We didn't have any new frappers this week, is that right?
Let's go back.
Yeah, there
in
was
time.
No new frappers.
But I wanted to.
Where are you, frapper people?
I wanted to mention a couple people that had frapper mapped us in the past. First is the Quiet Panologist at Work guys from Ashford, England.
They're very English,
and they're very funny.
They're very funny, but the thing is, I don't know what bangers and mash is.
Sausage and potatoes.
I don't know. Is it sausage and potatoes? I don't
now
understand.
You know.
And
there you
all
go.
The lorries.
The difference
and lifts,
between chips and crisps.
And I took the lift down to the lorry, and I'm just standing there going, I don't understand what's going on. I need to read a previous issue? Oh. That makes so much.
Tell Tim Hardaway, will you?
That makes.
All right, explain that to him.
Tim Hardaway hates cigarettes. I don't understand the English, and they're confusing
me. One of the things I love about the panologist guys is
don't
that
understand
you know,
English.
What we do with really bad comic books, we just put them, you know, in our bags and boards and forget about them. They like read them in the bathtub. That's how they punish the bad comic
I enjoy
books.
The idea that the English only take baths, that they don't know about showers. I only take a bath.
So anyway, the panologists have been our favorite friends. As has Monica Gallagher. I wanted to mention her because I checked out her site, which is eatyourlipstick.com.
I don't really. It's poisonous.
I live by that idiom.
There you go.
Eat your lipstick.
Monica is actually a very talented cartoonist. You can check out.
It would be better than lip your eat stick.
Lip your eat stick. Nice. You can check out her work at eatyourlipstick.com. Thank you for Monica. Tom.
What do you want me to talk
who
about?
Who watches you?
No, I already did that, man.
All right, never mind.
We're going to talk about a website. A website called AroundComics.com. And what do they have to offer? A lot. It's your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and opinions. While you're there, please take a minute to fill out our listener survey.
No.
It's not there anymore.
Don't read that
and
line.
And if you did, you are a sucker because we didn't even pay attention.
I paid attention.
Sort of. 99% of it was positive.
So
I wish more of you. I wish more of you would have been negative. So most of this announcement that I'm reading doesn't matter.
Well, just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at www.aroundcomics.com. This Thursday, you can hear a discussion with creator Mark Guggenheim. Following week, we're going to have all of our New York Comic Con.
It's free, so what do you want?
Thank you again to Borders. Borders is your source for the best original graphic novels, manga, hardcovers, trade paperback collections, and more. Not only will you find exactly what you are looking for, you'll discover new and unexpected authors and series. While you're at Borders, don't forget to check out their huge selection of music, movies, and magazines. Borders isn't just a bookstore. It has everything you need for your comics culture lifestyle.
Calendars.
Google Borders for a valuable coupon, and always remember to check Borders first. To find a store near you, go to www.borderstores.com.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at comicspodcasts.com. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. John, always a pleasure to have you in here for another episode.
Pleasure.
All good. Anything cool coming up on Word Balloon?
Oh, tons of cool things coming up. Jay Farber is Farber is already up there, and a new edition of the Bendis tapes will be coming up soon. And Greg Rucka debrief post New York Comic Con. So
debrief.
That's what we call it, the Rucka debrief, where we depants
decompression.
Greg Rucka.
Nice.
Have his ass there for everyone to see.
We're having a hug off.
With Rucka?
Yeah. Anyone who wants. I mean,
I'm not.
Actually, John, we're working on an exclusive with Greg while we're in.
An exclusive.
Let's hug this shit out.
Well,
man,
you're going to have a live conversation. Mine will just be on the phone. But that's
all right.
Well, he's not talking to us. He's just coming to sign.
He's
not going to even speak.
That's the deal.
The deal is we have to stand 5 feet away from
him. Head is up. Do not speak to me.
Exactly.
I have to be 50 feet away from him.
There's a restraining order.
Yeah, by law.
How do you know the name of my cat?
Stockerati.
You're crazy.
I have a sandbaggers for you,
all right, guys. Have a fantastic couple days. Check back on Thursday for a really fun talk with Mark Guggenheim. We've got all of those Flash questions will be answered, we promise. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere.
And around comics.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah.